Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up, I'll be joined by the incredible Jonathan Ranson, who, 6 years on from an accident that left him paralysed from the chest down, recently completed a hand cycle marathon. I'll meet mum of three, Kim Berg, who felt compelled to design a range of sustainable, eco-friendly children's wear. And Susan Jane White will join me to talk about growing your own and then what to cook with them. So what kind of health and wellness week did I have? It's been a little bit frantic. I can scarcely believe that another week has passed me by. Settling into things a little bit better, though, this week, I must say, I did have a realisation because, as I've mentioned before, I've struggled to understand why now it's OK for us to mingle a little bit more. But then I was in town on Monday. I was covering in here on Monday. So I was in town on Monday the 8th as all the shops were reopening, and I had a light bulb moment that the reason it's okay is because we were in lockdown for so long. It's so obvious, but it took me a while. Pretty much everything was closed for 3 months. So it does actually make sense that we would have less virus about as we take our tentative steps forward. And if you reopened your business this week, I hope it went well for you and that it continues to go in that way. And during the week, I interviewed Professor Arnold Hill. He's chairman of Breast Cancer Ireland and a leading breast surgeon, for their Instagram page. And while I'm sure it's been a worrying time for many during the pandemic, it was heartening to hear that clinics have been ongoing and emergency cases have still been seen. Now, what would have been 40 to 50 people a day was reduced to 15. And I know there's still much discussion as to screenings and when the national screening programme will roll out again. But the questions that came in were from Instagram followers, and the chat is still there in the highlights on Breast Cancer Ireland's Instagram page for anyone who might need it. But the message from Professor Hill was the same as you hear all the time. If you do find either a lump or you have any health issue or query, do always go straight to your GP. Don't put anything off, and they will pass you on then to wherever it is that you need to go. And my half marathon training continues. You might remember Roz Purcell and John O'Regan were on the show to tell me about the virtual half marathon Together Apart We Run that they had organised. And I said, yes, go on, I'll do it too. And I've enlisted one of my best friends, Alison, who is a seasoned marathon runner herself. I've cheered her on from the sidelines in Dublin and in New York. But this time I've gone from the sidelines and I'm running alongside her. Well, we have our 2 meter distance, mainly not only because of guidelines, but because I can't really keep up with her. And I know I'm slowing her down, but she definitely makes me run further than I would have without her. And she checks up on me and says, have I done my long run during the week? And she judges me if I haven't. So we also get to catch up, of course, and chat. So it's a win-win, depending on what way you look at it. I mean, I do love her, but I'm not sure I'll ever really love running. You're listening to Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, some of us have barely survived the last few months. Some of us are still barely surviving in the throes of working from home with no childcare and homeschooling. But some have been trying new recipes, baking banana bread, training for marathons and using things from the back of cupboards long since forgotten. So what of food writer Susan Jane White? Well, I know from her Instagram she's been growing herbs in the garden, and I do definitely like the look of her coffee, ice cream and cookies. She is on the line now. Hello there.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Claire.
What a shame you can't be in front of me offering me falva and cookies and all sorts. Damn you, COVID. How has the last little while in your house been?
Well, it has been up and down, just like everybody, I guess. There's really good days and then there's really bad days. But I'm still baking like a mad yolk and cooking not more than I ever have been, because this is what my profession is, you know, cooking and writing and eating. That's what I do for a living. But it's different because my space has been invaded. So I've tried to find a way to cope now with the consistent mess and dirt of my kitchen, having all my family in there constantly. And there's two things I've come to rely on in the last 3 weeks. Something I guess the pandemic has taught me to reconsider, and recalibrate my value system. And so I'm solely relying on batch cooking and growing my own salad leaves and fresh herbs, because I think, and your listeners can probably relate to this, you don't really, in the middle of a pandemic, want to run around to the store for two reasons. One, you're going to get stuck in the queue. So if you value your time, it's not something you want to do. And secondly, you don't want to expose yourself to any unnecessary bugs and viruses. So a lot of fresh food has, it's just been hard to come by. And I've had a lot of my readers writing in and saying, what can we do to balance the lack of fresh food in our lives? Because we're just not shopping every week. We're getting deliveries once every 3 weeks. And so I've really got into fermentation. So my kitchen is now this kind of mini Hogwarts, and I've turned into this sorcerer of bubbling and funky foods in my kitchen to try and preserve the fresh stuff that comes in. And then I'm growing loads as well, which is mad easy. So that's how I'm getting all my fresh stuff, Claire, into my body. And I feel like there's way more nutrients cartwheeling through my system.
Now, I do always aspire to grow my own, and even herbs. Like, I hate buying one of those plant pot herbs in a supermarket because, you know, they've just been blasted within an inch of their lives. They never last beyond that first usage. And if you buy them in a packet, quite often by the time you get them, it's all soggy. So the best way is to just be going out. But I just don't seem to be able to get there. Can you give it to us in phases, how you start introducing growing your own to your own garden?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I feel like a complete imposter because I'm really bad at it. Can I just say, I've been doing it for 10 years and I don't feel like, for example, I don't even know what soil I have. I still don't know what soil I have, but it's so easy. So a packet of seeds costs less than a packet of those kind of tasteless salad leaves, bagged salad leaves that you get in a supermarket. So that packet of seed, put it into a pot with soil, your compost, and you will get a salad all summer from it. So already it's cheaper, it's tastier, and there's more nutrition.
What about things like slugs? I mean, are you in an eternal battle with them?
No, because I put mine in pots. And I just stick them on my garden table. And you don't need a garden to grow any of these. This is what the amazing thing is about growing your own produce. I've seen people just growing from the actual compost bag. So they slit it down the middle and they put seeds into it. And they're growing stuff from it just on their balcony. It's really incredible. So you can any containers that you have. And I found as well through the years as I was growing stuff and I've been planting I planted wild garlic and it kind of took over everywhere. And so you learn as you go along. But I can't seem to kill any of my herbs, really and truly. They always grow. And I don't look after them very well either. So if your listeners get one thing out of this message, it's just go and try it. If you've never done it, don't buy a book on it. I've done that and it's a mistake because actually I got overwhelmed. Every book you get is kind of quite large and I don't even know where to start in the book. If you want a starting point, there's a website called getirelandgrowing.ie and they have 5 minute little tutorials on growing salad leaves and when to cut it and when to plant it. And now is the time. You can plant everything right now. It's really cool. And you just have to push the seeds into the soil and that is it. So I really appreciated those tutorials. And actually, while I don't know the two personalities in the tutorials, I bet you do. And I think they're two lovely Irish personalities. You'd recognize them if you see them. They're on getirelandgrowing.ie. And they're also giving away 1,000 starter kits in the month of July. So it's worth registering for one of those, the draw.
Okay, good. Because you need that. I think I need tutorials. Yes. I need to see it, But it sounds like it's fairly foolproof. So what have you been doing then with the herbs and the salad leaves that you've been growing? What recipes have you been putting them in?
So I'm putting them in whatever I'm eating that day, whether it's a pasta or whether it's a roast, or I'm literally just cutting herbs and putting it on top, and it just kind of freshens things up and brings this liveliness to your dinner that a lot of us aren't are lacking and are missing. You know, the real fresh zing to a supper, so that it's not made from pantry staples like we have been doing for the past 3 months. And then with the salad leaves and yesterday I had a massive glut of parsley. I made salsa verde. I just whipped it up in the food processor with lemon and olive oil, and then I could put those and lots of garlic and ginger. I can put that into my freezer in little ice cube trays or in jars. So if you have a glut of anything, you just whip it up into any sort of any salsa that you fancy, and you can make up your own recipes. It's hard to go wrong with herbs. You just always flirt with olive oil, salt, a bit of garlic and lemon, and then they taste pretty amazing. Meteoric, you know, on your scrambled eggs. So just they'll change up your breakfast table and your dinner table quite quickly. And again, you didn't have to leave the house to get that freshness added in to your diet. So that's what we've been focusing on. I'd love to be the kind of person who says I grow my own cabbages, but I don't. So I stick to the herbs because I can't kill them, you know, even though I absolutely ignore them and I don't give them any TLC. They seem to really work for me. So if you want to start with something, I would definitely recommend starting.
Good. Now, I prefer you coming from this angle because somebody who is flying it can be overwhelming. At least we're starting on a level playing field. And have you cooked anything new over the last few months? I know I put up on Instagram that I gave your squash gnocchi a go and you replied to say it was one of the trickiest ones in the book. But actually, I found it very enjoyable and it's quite nice. You feel quite an achievement that you've made your own gnocchi when really it is only a bit of a dough.
It's a bit of a dough, yeah. It's mashed, it's either sweet potato or butternut that you use and a bit of rice flour in there as well. And it's something really comforting to do. My children love making it and they love roasting garlic as well. The stuff that we've been getting up to is, again, to stoke my little colony of good bacteria and just to try and prep my family for any viruses that we may pick up, you know, or to prime our immune systems for the rest of the year and going forward. I've been concentrating on gut health. So there's a lot of fermentation going on and the kids are being involved in that as well. For a while there, they actually were massaging the cabbages and making kimchi.
So
no,
give us that.
Homeschooling.
This always freaks me out because I'm always really into it and I feel I'm really into gut health. And this is a really positive thing we can do for ourselves health wise, starting in the gut. And there's so much new research. I've had a couple of people on the show about it. So I'm completely convinced. But I feel like a faker if I'm just buying kombucha or whatever in the supermarket or a kefir. I want to make things myself at home. But then I don't want to be feeding any scobies in the corner, or I just can't really get my head around things that are alive in my kitchen.
Yeah. From kefir grains to kombucha. Yeah, I totally get you. So if that's something that you don't want to do, there's other things that you can absolutely tackle. And it's in our DNA. It's with cabbage. And we used to preserve cabbage here in Ireland. Of course we did. We had amazing sea salt. And we just massage shredded cabbage with sea salt. And stick it in a bowl, cover it with water, leave it there for an hour, and it softens it, you know, kind of into this delicious, that's a great word.
I like it.
Softens it to a delicious taste. And then when you drain it, you can also massage the things that I love doing, and this is a typical Korean recipe for kimchi. So you have chili, turmeric, ginger, and garlic. And I don't know about you, but I feel like I could live forever when I eat these foods. They really do put the super into superfood. And a lot of them also, especially the turmeric, has a very high curcumin content, which has shown to interrupt the production of inflammatory markers, and those odious leukotrienes, which cause inflammation in the system. So the more you become friends with these foods, the more your body gets used to it. And I think you just feel more confident that you're fueling your gut. And it's a very easy way of getting fermented foods into your diet. So you have your salted massaged cabbage in the bowl. It's been drained. And then you just massage it a bit more with minced garlic, or you could use your grater. The grated garlic, grated turmeric, grated ginger, and a bit of chili. And then you stick it in, you push it all down into a jar, just a really big, large glass jar. And natural juices from the cabbage will come out and preserve your jar of, I call it kimchi, call it fermented cabbage, whatever you want. And you can tuck into that every single day as your form of salad. So you don't have to be going out and buying your fresh salad. Or if you're not growing fresh salad, this is a really good alternative to do kimchi or any fermented cabbage recipe.
So if you're having a piece of meat or a piece of fish, you kind of have it as a side. You just sort of...
Exactly, yeah. And it cuts through the fat of any fatty dish that you might be having. It really is the diva of the barbecue season, because everybody goes, oh, I love kimchi. You know, it was created hipsteria from Berlin to Bantry. You know, every really funky, groovy cafe has some sort of fermented food to offer. So it's definitely a good starting point.
And I love as well with you that you're all about balance. So while yes, you've got all the superfood stuff on the go, that there's always room for treats. There's always something sweet. There's always something good in there that'll give you gut health in a different way, or a smile
yeah,
from the gut.
Absolutely. And I think the thing about healthy eating is, if it's not bringing you joy, I think it negates the benefits of healthy eating. You know, sadness will. And if you're eating a joyless meal and you're not, and you feel like it's penance, I think that association with food can bring on its own negative effects. So I think food should always be full of joy and full of whoopee, and it's not, good food should not be a tax. So it's all about finding foods, and that's what my motto is, taking the hell out of healthy. So I won't eat anything because it's healthy. I'll eat it because it tastes good, and it also happens to give your body a nutritional slam dunk. That's my vibe. It's gotta feed my body, but number one, it's gotta taste good. Because I'm feeding my boys here, my husband, and my loved ones around me. And I can't persuade anybody to eat my food unless it tastes good, because that's the most nourishing part. That it tastes good. You want it into your body, and you don't feel like it's a penance. So that's where I'm coming from.
I absolutely love your vibe. I completely agree with you, and I feel the same.
Claire.
And you can check out Susan Jane's recipes in The Independent every Sunday in Life magazine, and she's Susan Jane Kitchen on social media and on Instagram. You'll find lots of gorgeous food pictures and videos. Thank you so much for coming on. Great to talk to you, Claire.
Yeah, have a good one.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Coming up, the latest in fashion eco trends.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
Mother of three, Kim Berg, launched her children's clothing range last year and began looking at eco trends and sustainability, and discovered upcycled material, which she now features in her leggings. She's on the line now. Hello, Kim.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me on.
It's very interesting, because we are living in a time where we're all a bit eco-conscious, and particularly when it comes to things like fast fashion.
Absolutely, especially in the last few years. I know from just being a mother of in the last 5 years, just looking for different brands that last well and wash well. And that's what led me to bring out the dresses.
So you come
year.
From a large family yourself. You have,
yes.
Is it seven siblings?
Yes. Family of, I'm one of eight, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
If something's going to be a hand-me-down, you want it to be something good, something nice.
Well, I think back in the 80s, the clothes were actually quite good. So the hand-me-downs did last. They were probably a good quality. We didn't have all the fast fashion chains.
Tell us a bit about the fabric then, because that's what you found. When you started researching eco trends in clothing, this is what you found.
So when I had my first daughter, I found a couple of brands that I really, really liked and still use and have handed down, which would be like Molo, Bobo Chose. And I found those in a small boutique down in Sandymount called Mira Mira. And from there, the idea kind of went, you know, it was niggling away. I really like these brands. I kind of want to design something myself. And then things became way more important, like with the materials that were being used. Where were they coming from? There were buzzwords being thrown around, like closed loop fashion, things like that. So I really did my research. And last year, the dresses that I bought out were made from tencel lyocell, and that's basically a type of fiber from wood pulp, and that is a big buzzword at the moment. You'll see probably more chains coming out with it, like tencel lyocell. So my dresses were made from tencel lyocell, so it's kind of a closed loop, a buzzword. So basically you were taking things from the environment and recycling it, using it again, and they're all from sustainable wood sources. And then ethanol, which is basically It's a type of nylon, but it's made from abandoned fishing nets, fabric scraps, carpet flooring, industrial plastic from landfills and oceans all over the world. Then it's sorted, cleaned, and then you make it into nylon. And it's really soft, breathable fabric. And so that's what my leggings are actually made from.
And it's really fascinating having a look at them on your website last night. On your leggings, you say Econol, regenerated from nylon made from recycled fishing nets, 78%, and 22% European water bottles.
Yes.
And it's amazing to think that these things are being used up, because, I mean, this is huge.
Yes, no, it is. And the thing is now, what the fashion industry is trying to do is they're trying to keep it within society for as long as possible. So you're maximizing usability, minimum adverse environmental impacts, minimum waste generation, and with the most efficient use of water, energy and other resources to extend the life cycle of what you're wearing. So it's a kind of slow fashion is a term you might use instead of, as opposed to fast fashion. So say you go into a store and you buy something like, say, for €5, and it lasts for a week, and then you're throwing that into the clothes bin, and then that goes to landfill. Now, obviously, the whole thing is quite difficult because not everyone has loads of money to go and buy something that might be better quality. So actually, the whole slant now and emphasis is on going to secondhand shops and trying to find clothes and rewear them. That's something that people are trying to do as well. So it's not just going out and buying a really expensive item. And you'll see more and more websites are coming up, like Fastair, that they sell really lovely, beautiful designer wear for adults and children. And you can go online and buy them, and they've been worn a couple of times, but they're in good condition. So people are trying to change the way they buy and shop.
Yeah, because you're right. I mean, you don't want to say to somebody, you shouldn't buy something for €5 if that's what they can afford. But it's the people who maybe can afford to shop a bit differently and just be a little bit more conscious in their purchases. I have a lot of investment pieces in my wardrobe alongside a lot of high street purchases. But what I do find is when I'm doing a clear out, it's the fast fashion pieces that are going into the bags and being sent off. And then a lot of that time it is being reused if it's going to charity. But sometimes these things are ending up in landfill. So you need to think. Sometimes I'll pick up something I think is a great bargain and it won't last. I won't look after it. It won't wash well and then it's gone. Whereas the things that you do invest in, you do tend to take them out time and time, year in and year out. And I would never have really thought about it with children's clothes because they grow so quickly and because they work them so hard, whether it's a baby who soils it constantly or a kid that's out climbing trees. But there are certain pieces, as you say, that you can buy that can be passed through siblings if they're of the right quality.
Yes. And if the other thing is as well, if you can try and buy pieces that are now being regenerated or they are from cellulose fiber is just such a good thing now, and more fashion brands are really, they're investing in these pieces. So look out for that on a label, even if it's not mine. So like Tencel, Econol, those sort of things, they are GOTS certified. That's also cotton uses up a lot of water, and it's actually one of the worst things in many cases to buy now. But if it's GOTS certified, that means that they have gone out of their way to try and cut those wasting water and things like that down, and they can trace back to where the seeds came from, which farmers planted things. So there are things you should look out for if you're buying products.
And it's starting to move across. I understand this Econol was in Prada and Burberry collections. It was worn on the red carpet to the Oscars. So only at industry level, but the big hitters are also looking at all of this, as well as some of the smaller brands.
They are. They're being great. Look, I think that there are conscious eco pods popping up in the bigger department stores. And look, that's brilliant. And I think that is important. The consumer is asking those questions and there is a demand for them. And I hope that it spreads even further, because that's what we need. We do need that. It's just the amount of azo dyes that are out there. Well, they're being cut down on too. But just, be conscious now of what you're buying, because there are better things for your kids out there. And I am hoping to bring out some sweaters this year. I'm collaborating with some screen printers now. That's exciting. So hopefully that will come to fruition this year.
And so what else is next? Are there challenges with you getting stock now at the moment while everything
returns
to normal?
There might be, yes. There might be. But I do produce on such a small scale. But with that said, because of the masks, in my particular situation, yes, there might be a bit of a delay, but I am hoping to get things across the line and get some more leggings out. And I hope to actually bring out the adult leggings to match the other leggings. And also, I'd love to diversify and do some kind of track pants for boys, because the Econol material is so cool. So I could actually I'm working on making a cool design for boys, and my sweaters, which are coming out. So I'm really excited about that. I just don't know what scale I can get and how many units I can get, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, it's an interesting journey you've been on, from somebody who was just interested in seeing how you could make it more sustainable. It's incredible what you found out and what is actually going on within the fashion industry. For more, go to fancyfawn.ie. Designer Kim Berg, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you, Claire.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Coming up, I'll be joined by Jonathan Ranson, who 6 years on from an accident that left him paralysed from the chest down, recently completed a hand cycle marathon.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
In the summer of 2014, Jonathan Ranson and his friends decided to head to San Diego on a J1. An accident at a swimming pool while there left Jonathan paralysed from the chest down and needing major surgery. 6 years on, and Jonathan has defied many odds, gaining good usage of his hands, walking with an exoskeleton, and recently hand cycling 42 kilometres to raise funds for Spinal Injuries Ireland. He's on the line now. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. Well, how are you? I mean, you completed that marathon hand cycle within a 5 kilometre radius of where you live due to lockdown. I mean, that was just a further challenge thrown into the mix.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible thing to be doing. Well, from my own perspective, just to reach that kind of goal. But also, luckily enough, I'm kind of within a location where it was kind of feasible for me to do 42K hand cycle within my locality.
Yeah, and you live coastal, so you could do some nice coastal directions this way and cut back this way, and fair play to you. We'll get to that in a minute, because you've raised an incredible amount of money and you're still aiming to do that. But can you take us back a little bit? I know I don't want your accident to define you completely, but it is so incredible how far you've come since that summer in San Diego. So can you take us back to then and what happened that day at the pool?
Okay, so about coming up to 6 years ago now, in July, the 21st of July 2014, I was away in San Diego on a J1 with 10 of my friends, you know, living a fairly ordinary J1 experience, working part-time, going to the beach, you know, using the pool in the accommodation we were in. And yeah, everything was good, you know, life was pretty good. So one night we decided just to kind of sit around the jacuzzi, and in the accommodation we were living in, there was actually two pool complexes. So we were kind of staying next to one complex, so we were used to going to that one. And I, over the 6 weeks being there, I actually hadn't visited the other pool. So in my head, they were kind of mirror images of each other. So we're kind of sitting around jacuzzi, and you know, it's quite warm, so I said, you know what, I'll have a little dip in the pool to cool down. And without really thinking, just a bit of a lapse in concentration, I dived into what I thought was the deep end. But it turns out that the pools were not mirror images, and I dived into the shallow end. So kind of hit my head there. Immediately I felt somewhat of an electric shock, sort of like a light switch kind of moment, where I knew immediately, you know, something very bad had happened.
Yeah, it's funny how your brain knows. You know, it's interesting that people often talk about a major event and that it sort of happens in slow motion, or that a different sort of consciousness comes around. And, you know, you owe a lot to your friends at that time, because some of them had first aid training. Was it that they knew what to do at the time that made a difference before the emergency service arrived?
A couple of my friends, we were all in Belvedere, so we would have done life-saving training throughout our time there. So a good few of the lads had actually completed courses in it. So they no one kind of panicked. They kind of knew exactly what to do, not to move me, and just kind of keep a positive mindset, and, you know, not to move me out of the pool or call the emergency service straight away. And that obviously stood hugely to nothing worse happening, I suppose.
Yeah, than being dragged out of the water and perhaps causing further damage. So what was the damage that was done?
So I fractured my C5 vertebrae in my neck, which is cervical. And it's, so you've got seven vertebrae in your neck, so it's the second, C5, C6 would be the second or the third lowest one before you hit your back. So that caused neurological damage from my chest down, which paralyzed pretty much every muscle from my chest down, including triceps, and also hand function, finger function, and anything below my chest, basically.
And as I say, you've defied many odds. I mean, to get to a point where 6 years on, you're hand cycling a marathon around your area is a massive, massive achievement. And I know there's been a lot of challenges and achievements along the way. Is the mental challenge of coming to terms with your life as you know it changing as tough as the physical challenges that you face?
I'd say the mental challenge is probably the hardest challenge, really. But once you get your head around the mental side of it, I think the physical side kind of just follows. If you believe, you set a goal for yourself, and you believe you can do it, I think that's more than half the battle.
And what do you think were the things that helped you to achieve what you have? What do you think were the main things that helped you to get your head around it and get to that positive place?
Well, I'd say most importantly would be family and friends, just having positive influences around me, which, you know, having positive people around you, it's gonna push you and give you a positive, more positive outlook, and make you believe that you can actually achieve these kind of big milestones.
And you have achieved so much. I mean, you recently passed your driving test first time. Your Instagram is full of travel photos. You've been to Japan, which is seriously on my wish list, although obviously you're traveling a little less at the moment. But you certainly don't sit in a room moping about at all.
No, that was kind of my mindset from the beginning. I said, you know what, there's no point in sitting around here feeling sorry for yourself. Now, I'm sure initially I probably did for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, but I said, you know, might as well go out here. You see people on Instagram that are doing amazing things after suffering various accidents or injuries. So I just kind of have the mindset of, sure, if they can do it, why can't I?
Yeah, and it is a great thing. I sometimes forget about Instagram in that you can share experiences and reach out to people who are going through the exact same thing as you with something like a spinal injury. I hadn't really thought about that you can document what they're doing and follow their treatment and in some ways, you know, use it to your benefit.
Yeah, I've actually found Instagram at times to be hugely beneficial for me, because it's kind of opened the door to what's kind of out there in terms of like extended rehab. Once I was discharged from the National Rehabilitation Hospital after a five-month stay. Unfortunately, in Ireland, there's no facilities for kind of aftercare rehab. You have the community OTs and community physios, but it's not to the same intensity that you would get you used to getting while in the rehab. So for that reason, I found the likes of Instagram amazing, because I discovered different rehab facilities in, first of all, in Cambridge, a place called Prime Physio, which kind of showed me the possibilities that, you know, you're not just left in the state that you leave the rehab in. There's huge possibilities to improve beyond that.
So your prognosis at the start, what was it about the usage you would have of your hands or your arms, and how much has that changed to now?
So a C5, C6 spinal cord injury would suggest that there's different degrees to it. They have a scale where they test your, called the Asia scale, which tests your sensation and motor function. So it can range from Asia A, which would be no sensation and no motor function below the level of your injury, to I think it's D or E, whereby you'd have a much higher degree of sensation and movement below your level of injury. So there's people that would have the same injury as myself and could be walking with a walking stick or crutches. So it's kind of fine margin. So there's no concrete answer to your potential. But what they said to me was, I was at the kind of categorized as an Asia B, which meant that I've got sensation below the level of my injury, but at the time I had no motor function. Now, since that, I felt that there was always potential for motor function to improve for me. So, yeah, over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, I've proved myself right, I guess. You know, I haven't gotten to the stage of, you know, standing up or walking or anything to that degree, but kind of small gains. I've really improved my core, abs, lower back, and I've gained a bit of movement in my lower legs as well, and my hamstrings and my quads. So there's I've definitely defied the expectations in that sense of the prognosis, you know.
Yeah, and in a way, sometimes it's good that it's not concrete, you know, and even if it was, sounds like you would have pushed on through it. You've been training regularly with your trainer, Oren Heron, and you both went to Florida to a performance centre there. And it's incredible to see videos of you on weight machines doing things that you would never think that somebody with a major spinal injury or paralysis from the chest down would be able to.
Yeah, no, luckily enough, through fundraising, I have a fundraising committee who set up a lot of events kind of prior or post injury, which has kind of allowed me to travel to Florida and to England for physio. But yeah, it's amazing. They kind of just throw you in the deep end. The performance center I was in would train, you know, Olympic athletes. The Jamaican Olympic athlete team were training in there while I was there. They have everyone doing the same exercises. Now, you might have to adapt the exercise with machines slightly, but their vision is, you know, we're not going to just put you in a kind of a rehab facility and do spinal cord injury related exercises. Like they'll put you right in on the machines and push you to your limits, really.
And the exoskeleton, tell me a little bit about working with that. It says underneath the video I watched of you that there are 41,811 steps and counting. Is that the number of steps that you've taken with it?
Yeah, the exoskeleton, that's the amount of steps that I have completed so far since first using it, I'd say about 3 years ago. Now, I got into using it through Mark Pollock, who I'm sure everyone has heard of at this point, but he was kind of instrumental in getting an exoskeleton into Ireland and to be used kind of on a personal basis. I started using the exoskeleton about 3 years ago in Trinity with Mark, and then since that, they've set up a new exoskeleton program in DCU in Dublin, which is run by Ronan Langan, who is an ex-physiotherapist from the NRH, who I got to know while I was there. So I've been training with the exoskeleton and with Ronan twice a week over the last 6 months, really, until the lockdown happened. And, you know, accumulating about 500 to 1,000 steps per session.
And I mean, that's not to negate how incredible that is or the amazing work that both of those men are doing by bringing it here. But is that always the end goal for somebody who's paralysed, or even just speaking, I suppose, from yourself, to stand, to walk? Is that always the sort of the golden egg, as it were, for somebody with a spinal injury?
No, I don't think so at all, really. I think, you know, that is the... It would be amazing, but it's probably not. It's not as important as you would think. The most important thing, I suppose, for myself would be independence. Now, whether that's in a wheelchair or walking, just having my own independence would be far greater than just being able to stand up and walk.
Yeah, of course, I can totally understand that, and I think that's why you've such an affinity for Spinal Injuries Ireland, because that's something they are very much about, isn't it? When you did your hand cycle, you aimed to raise 16,000 for them. You have surpassed that, but they very much need their funds. And you say that one of the things you love about them is that they helped you to build up the confidence to do things like go to matches, go to the cinema, because yes, standing up and walking and all that is amazing for you to be getting involved in, but just going to the cinema with your mates and doing normal stuff is more golden, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so as you said, just getting back into society and feeling, I don't want to say the word normal, but feeling back to yourself and just being able to do ordinary things is probably far more important than being able to stand or walk. So, yeah, I was delighted to do it for Spinal Injuries Ireland. And initially, my goal was it was 1,000 euro I was hoping to raise, just to give them something as a kind of thank you for all the work that they did with me, or how they helped me while I was in the rehab. And now, amazingly, already surpassed 16,500, which is just phenomenal.
Well, they need the funds, as you say, because they rely a lot on charitable donations. And obviously, the charity section has been fairly decimated by not being able to have a lot of events and fundraising as they would. So if people want to support, you can go to spinalinjuries.ie, or you can check out Jonathan's Instagram page, Jono_Ranson. And you'll be envious of his travel pics, and you'll also see a GoFundMe link in his bio there as well. So Jonathan, we can't even say normal anymore, because normal now means a whole lot of different things since the pandemic started. But I think you've done extraordinary things with your life, and you will no doubt continue to do very more. It was great talking to you today. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Claire. Lovely to speak to you today.
Incredibly positive story from Jonathan Ranson. I didn't even get to half of his achievements, to be honest, even though we discussed so many. He even went back to Trinity 6 months after leaving the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary and completed the final 2 years of his business degree. So, yeah, scoring on all levels. He's really great. So do check out more, as I say, spinalinjuries.ie or Jono_Ranson on Instagram. That's it from Alive and Kicking for this week. Thank you for listening. Thanks also to my producer, John Fardy, and to Jojo Cordoza on sound. I'll see you next week.